This is the Grow Strategist Radio Show, the peer-to-peer program for executives of mid-sized companies. All comments, views, and opinions are solely those of the host, guests, and callers. It's time for the Grow Strategist Radio Show, and here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is the Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. And this is a peer-to-peer-to-peer program that's on video and radio and a number of places on the internet now on a weekly basis. So you can download shows from our archives, and we're getting pretty close to our 300th broadcast, so we're real excited about that. And what we mean by peer-to-peer-to-peer, it is the host, the guests, and the listeners are all presidents, CEOs of mid-sized companies. And so I rotate through different growth strategies. So one week it's a retailer in Singapore talking about how they grew through, say, franchising. And next week, it could be a manufacturer in Kansas City talking about how they're growing through acquisitions or geographic expansion. So it's quite the variety. And then what I look for are some key overriding strategies, not just something specific like a franchise or an equity buyout or anything like that. Things like you're changing your business model. You're really looking at how do you do business, life around you has changed, maybe the economy's affected you, the customers are needing something else, competition's picking up, the way you're doing business is getting a little too expensive. And so you've noticed that Drew Morris-Rowe is sitting here, and welcome, Drew.
Thank you, Aldon. It's great to be here again.
Yeah, we got you again. And here we go. This is a repeat, you know, guest for the show. This time we're going video to see his wonderful countenance. And he's an example of somebody who a couple years ago didn't like the way some of the numbers are working. The business is getting a little too hard. It's not resulting in the kind of bottom line that he needed. And not getting the results for the clients that he wanted. Even though they're satisfied, he wasn't. And so we had him on, I think it was January 09, right?
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah. So this is the two-year checkup. To say, all right, so you made a business model change. We want to hear the inside skinny on how you actually did it, why you did it, what happened, all that. So let's frame it a little bit. People who have not gone to the archives yet and heard your show, they may not know who you are. You know, pick a name of a famous person. This is not another interview with Warren Buffett. You know, a lot of us don't know people. They don't know you and they don't know me. So you are the CEO of CTN Solutions. And that was founded in 1994, right? So my impression of the business, if I'm reading it right, because I've had some other clients in this space, you do network infrastructure, you do disaster recovery and business continuity, high availability, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So when do companies come to you? When do they know they need that?
Well, that's an interesting question. Companies, some companies come to us open arms saying we need help, we need support around this. And other companies don't realize they need us, but they really do. They need help in terms of how their IT is running in their business. So many times I go into organizations and I find that the organization is being run by the IT folks versus the executives and the CEO and leadership are leading the organization and IT is providing support to that. So lots of times we're walking into organizations in one way or another to just at least assess where they are so we can give them some guidance, at least validate what they're doing, say, hey, you're doing a great job, or look at the organization and say, you know, there's some major issues here and I think you need some help. And sometimes that help.
Well, you know, let me guess, when you sound like that, you're talking about mid-sized companies because that disconnect between, okay, what brought us here isn't going to get us there kind of language happens.
Yes.
At mid-size, and there's a lot of delegation, but not speaking up to say, okay, executives, where are we going? Here's how much we know in IT. And then there's this big space, right, between where the company needs to go and what their current infrastructure is. But who's going to say it? You know, is an IT guy that's running as fast as they can going to speak up? Probably not.
Right. You know, every organization needs somewhere between 15 and 20 skill sets to run IT effectively. The biggest organizations out there, I mean, take TD Bank or take Coca-Cola. They have huge IT organizations from the chief information officer all the way down to a help desk person. You take a company with 60 people or 150 people. They need all those skill sets too, but they can't afford them on a full-time basis.
No. And the skill set they complain about having one person.
Absolutely. And the skill set that we the skill set that they need the most, that we find that they're most lacking, is what I would call the chief information officer or chief technology officer skill set. That's the strategic skill set that allows them to get an understanding of where the organization's going from a leadership, from a vision strategy perspective, and then be able to understand how technology can help that. I find that missing out of so many organizations, and I think that's where they start to really stumble as it comes to IT.
Well, and it's one of the reasons they need to outsource a piece of that. They might not think they can afford the full-time IT strategist, and so they have to fit someone like yourself and your company in there, and then make that decision about how much are we going to do ourselves and or have you do. So now, more about your company. I mean, you're in the Philadelphia area.
Yes.
You've been on the Philadelphia top 100 list several times. I mean, this is a rapidly growing, you're on the radar kind of business. Now, one of the things that happened to you, though, was you were doing projects. And so it's high, you never quite know what's coming in next quarter. And you have to, rush to make sure you have a really deep bench. But if you can't count on the projects, how do you keep those people, right? So you end up bleeding money. Am I right? You went through that?
Yes.
So the decision was, there's got to be a better way. We want to be more stable. So you made the decision to go to the recurring revenue side of things.
We did.
I want to know. Now go back. I mean, it repeats a little bit about what you said in 09. But how did you see it? How did you know? I mean, that's scary. How did you know you needed to change?
I think the thing I saw the most was a recurring theme from when I even started the business. My initial focus when I started the company was small companies, people to 15 or 20 people. And as I grew the business, I wanted to get more into the middle market. I certainly didn't want to forget our past, but I wanted to get us more into the middle market. And as we got into what I would call the mid-tier market, which is somewhere between about 40 and maybe 300 employees, I was finding time and time again that our interests were completely misaligned with our clients. And
it
came this recurring theme. And by the way, it wasn't I just woke up one morning and said, our interests are misaligned with our clients.
That's the kind of thing that creeps up on you with somebody complained and you thought you were great at it.
Correct.
Or you have frustrations on projects and you want it to go right. And just over a period of time, agitation is more than pleasure, more than pride. Yeah?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, a perfect example, Aldana, is that we would say to a company, we need to come out every week or every other week and spend some time maintaining. And they would say, no, thank you, we're fine. Because if we come out, they would get a bill. So
yeah, they know it costs. They go, we can do this, we can do this. Just show us how.
Exactly. 3 months goes by, we do no maintaining. There's a major problem. We go in, we save the day. We spend maybe 3 days fixing something major, and then we're in an argument over bills because they thought it was going to take 4 hours, but our bill was 20 hours.
They're angry that there was a problem you had to fix.
Exactly.
Because you put it in, and 3 months later, you're back having fixed stuff. So obviously, you must not know what you're doing. It's a really – it's an adversarial relationship.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So when I sat back and looked at this, I said, the clients expect 100% service, and we should be providing that to them. There's no doubt about that. We weren't any different there, but they had concerns over cost. How do I predict what I'm going to spend when it relates to network infrastructure and IT services? How can I be sure that I'm making the right investments? And how do I get somebody to sit at the table with me as a partner? And when we saw those, I sat back with my team and said, you know what? I think we need to change our business model. I think we have to look at doing things differently in terms of finding a way for the client not to incur a cost every time we were providing them a service, whether it was preventative or reactive to a problem.
Now, so what I've noticed was when people start saying the phrase, we got to change our model, it's when there was a core thing that both the customer, the primary customers, your really core customers, what they say they want and what you need to be doing quality work, now, isn't even just about money. It's around congruence and fit. So apparently your core customers that you really wanted to knock them dead, make them thrilled, they wanted consistency. They don't want breakage. They don't want surprises. They want a predictable bill. They want to know who they're calling. The consistency is a big word I'm hearing behind what you're saying.
Yes.
And ironically, you want consistency too, predictability, et cetera. So that's a win-win. And when you have that type of, oh, wait a second, there's a core group where our needs are going to be mutual if we change. That's what prompts business model change, I notice. Now, and you can hear, and we're going to go into the next break, but you can hear there's also some decisions with this. What do we do about the small ones that still want project and nickel and dime? Is this going to change the staff? Is it going to change the financing? How long is this going to take? Oh, my goodness, we're going to have to run in parallel for a while. Okay, here comes the nightmare of saying the sentence. We have to change our business model. It's not that easy, yeah? All right, so let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about, all right, when you had that realization, where'd you start, how'd you do it, and what was it like? You know, did you have a lot of hair before you did business model change? Well, it's like President of the United States. They all get gray, you know, in that first year. Same thing. They just had a business model change. All right, this is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back with Drew Morris-Rowe talking about changing your business model of CTN Solutions.
Please pay attention to the following message. Are you trying to maximize the resources that are available in your business? Do you think your business could benefit by having enhanced negotiation skills? If so, this message is for you. With more than 3 decades of negotiation experience, Greg Williams, the master negotiator and body language expert, author of the book Negotiate, Afraid, No More, has trained and assisted business professionals worldwide with their negotiation efforts. If you want to gain an edge in your negotiation with competitors, have your top people trained in current negotiation tactics, strategies, and techniques, and discover how to read body language to obtain greater insight in someone's real state of mind when negotiating, contact Greg Williams at 609-369-2100. That number again is 609-369-2100. By doing so, you and your business will be better positioned to win more negotiations and increase your bottom line. You can also read free articles on negotiation at www.themasternegotiator.com. That's www.themasternegotiator.com. Contact Greg Williams, the master negotiator and body language expert, today for your free consultation. The number again is 609-369-2100.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and today we're talking about changing your business model. And it feels like on the fly, you know, as you're living the previous premise, you're also creating the others. And if you thought you were having problems with your business model before you said, let's change it, watch what happens to you when you have to run two at once and make sure the new one fits because you get too scared to let the old one go. This is not easy to do. All right, so Drew, CTN Solutions, a couple years ago you decided this. Tell me a little bit about the beginning phase. How did you get your act together to figure out what to start? Do you remember?
I do remember. It's all coming back to me now. the first thing is that we had to improve our internal systems. Because you're an IT company doesn't mean that you have everything perfect when it comes to your internal systems. When I meant our internal systems, I mean our software, if you will, our CRM software that allows us to integrate all these components. We were using about 4 or 5 different pieces of software, something that would run our project management, something to manage our ticketing, something to deal with our accounting and billing, something for a knowledge base, all these disparate systems we were using. And the very first step of the process was we've got to get on a better platform so that we can capture all this information and really make the organization efficient in terms of people working together. So,
Isn't that ironic? You had to start with a system change. But in a way, it makes sense. If you were project-oriented, you had to tailor every piece, and it was pieces. And now you're having more of a you're selling continuity and consistency. Your software has to be consistency oriented. Yeah, that makes sense.
It does. And think about it, when you're a project shop or an hourly shop, which is what we were for so long, the systems weren't as critical because you were focused on that individual project. You're almost designing a system around that particular project. Now, if you will, the whole company and everything that it does became a project. It became a massively complicated project. So that was the very first step in the process. While that was going on, because of course business doesn't stop, we don't get to hit stop for 60 days and do this. But while that was going on, it was then we were creating the offering by which we could build this recurring revenue model. What were the components of the offering? What are the things that we'd have to include? What are some value adds that we're going to just put in there that make sense for our clients? And then finally, how are we going to price this thing? How are we going to price this? And what we've arrived to in the last two or so years is a per user pricing of the model. Because what is really helpful to a company, you know, so many of the companies that we run into in terms of competitors, they're pricing by how many servers you have and workstations and this and that. Well, we sat back and said, well, wait a minute. This is how we can get in misalignment again. So now it's in our interest to keep adding servers and adding complexity to the environment. That doesn't do anything to help the client. So let's do a pricing model that's per user. Very easy for the client to budget. We don't care what infrastructure you have in place. Mm-hmm. And you add people to your organization, you know what the cost is going to be for infrastructure. So it was the internal system. It's how you're going to price it. How are you going to sell it? And also, we went through a process of trying to move some of our older clients over.
I was going to say, you probably picked a few that were like the beta test, or if it didn't work for them, you knew you were missing something, right?
Exactly.
Is this an executive team group that was doing all this kind of modeling in addition to running the business for a while?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head of probably the key component of all this, which is the people component. And early on through the process a few years back, I realized that the people that were that got me from point A to point B may not be the people that are going to get me from point B to point C. And so,
isn't it amazing when you start talking about a business model change, you really discover somebody was really wonderful, say, in marketing, or your controller can do a lot of billing and understands projects. But then when you start saying we're going to have a retainer model or recurring revenue or a 5-year commitment or any of that, you notice that look, that glassy-eyed look where you can tell that person is over their head and they don't have anything to contribute to the discussion.
Yes.
So I don't want you saying anything bad about anybody, but you really run into limitations fast, don't you?
We did, and we made a few personnel changes. And that was difficult. It was challenging for the organization. It takes a lot of time. Any of the people that are watching that have gone through changing leadership roles or critical roles in their organization, it's very complicated. Mm-hmm. But I can sit back and say today, in April of 2011, the team that we have in place understands the model. They understand that where we're trying to get to. And I think they're committed, because now it's all about continuous improvement. And I'll tell you what, I'm also raising my hands right now to my team saying, guys, in 2 or 3 years, the model may change again.
It's going to change again. No, the way technology is, are you kidding? It doesn't even take a change in the economy.
Yes.
It's how fast technology moves. And you're a technology company, you're going to feel it first. Let me make some comments about the changing of the team, because one of the things I've noticed, I've been a growth strategist now for 40 years. I got to find another way to word it. It makes me sound old. But it means I've seen a number of things happen repeated times. You know, there's across different industries and such. And when you're changing a business model, there's this inflection point where you haven't officially committed your whole company to this is the new deal and we're not doing the old anymore. But some of the purchases, some of the decisions have to be toward the new thing or it's never going to happen. And that's scary because, you know, like, especially the leadership issues, because by the time you make a change in your marketing manager or your CIO or your anybody, the operations manager, any of those key roles, you're committing. So my question is, how did you handle that? What if the business model wasn't going to work? I mean, you remember that? You're hiring people and you really weren't sure?
Yeah, I think me, you know, and anybody that's on your show that is an entrepreneur and started on their own, they will understand what I'm saying when I say it had to work. We didn't have a choice. We committed way too much to this, and I'm being
you're like, what do they say in poker? You were all in.
Yeah, we were all in.
Right.
I mean, it had to work, and I'm being a bit sarcastic, but then again, I'm not.
No, because... I understand. That's exactly why I asked, because what I've noticed in business model changes, there is a point. You are all in, and it's like starting a new company. It's very entrepreneurial. This is not just, well, let's adjust what we're doing. Some people think new business model is adjusting. Nah. This is transformational change we're talking about. It's changing the way money works. Some people have asked me, what do you mean by business model? It's about the premise behind how the money works mostly. You know, what are people paying for? What do they expect? That whole contract, you know, that balance of what do they pay for? What do they get? Who guarantees what? All that. And once that changes, it's like changing into a whole new company. This is big. But there's that inflection point.
It is very big. And again, you're hearing me come through on that in terms of it had to work, because my role as the CEO, and the role I think of any CEO, is more than not, you're the chief cheerleader. Even if you think in your mind a little bit that it may not work, you have got to make sure that the way you represent it to your team, it's going to work. It's got to work. We're going to do what it takes. It's a very difficult transition for a business model change, and your team has to believe that what they're doing is going to have a positive result in the end. And of course,
now you're going to laugh about this. I'll just share something. I am in the process of creating my eighth enterprise. Okay. This is not a business model change. This is a new company, but it's a lot of time and work, you know, to create this thing. And one of the things that's freeing up staff and the people around me to kind of go with it is that because it's, I shouldn't say this on the air, but I'm going to do it anyway, because it's in New Jersey and it's such a political climate. And it's an intense state. It's like, if you know, it's never going to work. It's New Jersey. So there's this impression that it's so hard that if something goes wrong, it wasn't us. We can still try, but it's worth it. It's worth it. And they have this freedom to create. And I can admit, you know, I don't know if this is going to work, but we have the best shot at this. And so here we go. And ironically, this is one of the only times that I have had that feeling of a little opposite of what you're saying. Usually it is. This is going to work. Here's how we're going to make it happen. Bring any problems, we can solve them. And then at night, you might have your nightmares about, you know, I'm going to run out of money in the meantime, or whatever the nightmare was. This is the only one that I've experienced where we have to talk about the risks and the landmines every day and say, yeah, well, we're going to do it anyway. It's a weird feeling. So I just want to point that out to some people. Sometimes that's one of the decisions you make about whether or not it's a business model change to your existing business, or it should be a separate enterprise. If there is enough doubt that you would be too risking your base business too much, it actually is a separate company. That makes sense?
Yes.
Because, you know, what would happen if you got at that point of no return? What would you do? You got too much at risk. And sometimes that's a gut check thing. That's not a legal question. Someone will ask me, when is it a separate business versus the same? This is one of the tests of that question. You know, if you can't go back, if you couldn't, retain your credibility, if you couldn't figure out how to make revenue, if you just blew it apart, wait a minute, what? Maybe it should be a separate one, and then the other one can go away. Anyway, that's just an observation to people listening to this. You've got some choices in how you do this.
Yeah.
All right, so let me ask some specific questions.
Sure. If I can add to that as well, what we were also able to do was to sort of keep a portion of the old business model in place as we now move forward. So
that was my question. How much did you keep of the project stuff as a safety net?
We still do projects for clients. It's necessary.
2 years later. Whoa.
2 years later. 2 years later, we still do it for clients because that's part of our role in terms of managing their overall IT. Sometimes there are these improvement projects that are more capital related than they are maintenance related, and it just has to happen.
I got you.
But I will tell you, we our approach to them is entirely different. And what we also do is we have been cannibalizing, if that's the right word, our projects into recurring revenue opportunities. Perfect example. We sell clients, or for many years would sell clients email servers and implementations of email servers. Well, yeah. We now can host and provide all of those services to a client through our capabilities, through our data centers, et cetera. So yeah. When a client says, we need to buy a new email server, we're trying to embed, instead of saying, this is a one-off project, mm-hmm. we're embedding into our recurring revenue. And it's actually better for the client because they can't afford to make all the capital investments required to be mm-hmm. the same. You know, you ask a company, do you want your email to be up? And the CEO will say, I never want the email down ever. It's got to be up. No questions asked. But are they willing to spend the $500,000 or whatever the cost is to have redundant servers, redundant connections, redundant power,
et cetera? They got to be huge, just I guess.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Most likely or not. So instead of us trying to do that project for them, we are now able to embed that within our recurring revenue model. It makes
sense. Let's go back to the strategy question, though, okay? Because this is Drew's example of how he's doing it. He's not selling you his services. But you have to be able to talk like that when you have parallel things going on. And my reaction, my eyes, when you said you're still doing project, there's a risk. Because one of the things that happens within a company is it's almost a competition, the old way versus the new way. And there can be some, if you worded it as cannibalization, there can be some conflict. And it ends up being expensive. You know, either you're all in or you're not. And I've seen that with some companies in like the distributor side of things, where it looks like, you know, that we're going to be bringing your products and we've got it overnight and all that stuff. And then we also have this project business and we can be like an extension of your staff. I've seen conflict between in a very different industry where are you a service or are you distributors? And actually, here I go again, a separate company where it's really clear you need augmentation of your staff, you need projects assistance, you need some decisions or whatever, that's pretty separate from the core retainer, the core of what you're expecting. Separating it matters. I've seen it in high technology companies where they had to have the programmers almost feel like a separate business because if you're selling software versus you're selling the programming, it's not the same. So just asking people that are listening to this, you watched me when he said, we're still doing projects. Be careful. You can end up with some redundant systems and inconsistency and nightmares.
And I'll also interject too, Aldana, the difference though today versus 2 years, 4 years ago is that we will not take a new client on who calls up now and says, we need a project done.
That's not that way, their entree.
Exactly.
A new client doesn't get treated that way. You say, here's our, I love the name of your,
we call it
NetCare. You're a candidate for NetCare.
Yeah.
And here's how we do it, and here's all the pieces, and you're qualifying your customers to see if they have enough going on that they deserve what you do, and it's a good fit, right?
Exactly. And are they ready for the strategic stuff? So that's, I want to make that point clear as well.
Yeah. And that matters.
Say we're still doing projects, sometimes the way that you're, that your industry or your business works, you have to step into the past a little bit. But the change in my business is that we don't take new clients on that are just project related. We've got to fit them into our recurring revenue model, because at the end of the day, we know that it's in the client's best interest, which is why we changed the business model in the first place.
I've seen some of this. I have multiple businesses, and one of them is strategic planning and executive advisory. And some people want to skip the assessment and the plan. And when we jump right into giving them advice or doing an out-of-context project, you know what? After all these years, it's not a good idea. That's not the place to start. I'm going to risk making a mistake giving them advice about something when we're not centered. If I'm not centered, they're not centered, and I'm going to say something that they can't afford. That is not smart. I don't do it. Anyway, I got a question about the OEMs, okay? Now, in your business, you know, you've got other vendors and big players in this. I've noticed during a couple of my clients in your industry going through business model changes, managing the dance with the IBMs and the Avnets and such has been one of their challenges. So you don't be careful what you're saying, but tell me what you did to make that go well.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I can tell you right now, as an example, Microsoft, one of our partners for a long time, is, I think, unfortunately, trying to figure out what their act is. On one hand, they are asking us, incenting us, wanting us to sell new licensing. So licensing for that exchange server project. But on the other hand, we are working with them on a totally different level that allows us to provide their licensing on a subscription basis. So, you have to do the dance with the vendors, but I think you also have to be cognizant of the fact that these are huge companies and they've got their own issues too. I think at the end of the day, Microsoft is going through a very major internal conflict of, are we in the one-off sale of licensing business, or are we in the subscription sale of licensing business?
It's not resolved yet from what I've seen as of today.
It is not.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I asked. And I've seen some people where they have their business model in mind, and then they see a core conflict with one of their major vendors that brought them to the dance, and they've got to decide if their certification, platinum, et cetera, levels are important enough for the next phase. Where they have to go and they have to go to the big corporations and say, we're going through the revenue, a recurring revenue model change. Here's what it's going to take. Now, you know that they know. They've been through this, 100 times, if not more. They shouldn't need this kind of explanation, but they do. And there's this whole dog and pony of exactly how we're going to negotiate, what exceptions we need to the contract. And there's the management of the OEM to this, right?
Absolutely, there is. And frankly, the way business moves, the way the urgency is of these issues, you can't wait for your vendor to step in line behind you. Frankly, in one of our cases with one of our vendors, we actually had to find another alternative because their model was we sell one-off copies of licensing and CTN, you've moved to a subscription model, but we're sorry, we can't do that. And so we had to say that doesn't work for us. We've got to find somebody else. And these are tough. These are tough decisions.
There's implications to this. You know, it isn't that some people think that the toughest decisions will be, oops, a couple of members of your management team, you know, because that's got all the personal. I've seen some of the outside relationships be more tricky. Like in the middle of it, you may need to change your CPA because for project business and thinking like a small company and serving a lot of small businesses, it's transactional in nature, and even QuickBooks and simple kind of accounting can do it. So your bookkeeper inside and your CPA outside, everybody's happy. This is growing up. This is saying, you know, we're mid-sized to mid-size. Did you have to change your CPA firm and your internal bookkeeping?
We did, actually. We did change our accounting firm.
I'm not surprised.
About 5 or 6 years ago, in lieu of this, we just did not think that they were sophisticated enough to handle some of the things that we needed. Certainly, as I mentioned before, our internal systems, we made some improvements there. And the goal now of the business, because we're a really different business today. We're not as much as a service business as we are really a product business. We've got this product, NetCare, that, of course, has services behind it, but it's a constant improvement. That's what I'm engaging our people to do internally. How do we continue?
Yeah, you sell a system. You sell a program. Yeah, I understand.
Exactly. And it's a different way.
And there's a rhythm to it. I have another client that does cultural change programs on a really big scale with banks. And, you know, it's a 3-year deal because it's a transformation of those community banks. It just truly is. And so it's got all the pieces of the coaching and the training and the online stuff and the software and the events and the blah, 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 blah. And it's funny. How do you find the phrase for it? You know, it's like a product, but that's understating it. But that's what you're saying is, you know, we're partnering with you. We're going to do a whole bunch of stuff and we're going to keep adding on value so that we keep up with you when we're always 2 steps ahead of you. And you don't have to ask. We're going to be putting it in and prevent problems and make you money. That's what the relationship is. So it isn't just recurring revenue. That kind of understates it. It is a value proposition. This is value pricing and partnership pricing, in my opinion. So I think I want to clarify that. I want to have everybody who's listening to this, I want you to notice we're going to go through each area. When you do a business model change, it is everything. It's your staffing, your accounting systems, how you market, how you sell, all of it. And just one of the things I want you to think about is I've seen the limitations be not internal, but the vendors. Because they're all surprised. You thought you had the support network all lined up. And the next thing you know, you're changing your accountants, your attorneys, some of your suppliers. This is an amazing comprehensive change, and most folks don't realize it.
You're exactly
Which is
right.
The next one I should ask you about? What was the biggest change where you really had to work?
Well, I think continue to selling the value was a big thing. So we had done some trials of this. We had started to get successful at it, and then we found out in one or two situations where, year two into year three of the contract, the client's sitting back and saying, "Well, what do you guys do for us?
Yeah.
What exactly do you do?" Because their IT had been functioning so well, they're now looking at it from the standpoint of, oh, I guess this is a cost that we can cut or reduce or whatever the case.
And they take it for granted. You prevented a bunch of problems. How do you value prevention? My late husband used to be a community planner, and he would do things that prevented transportation problems. How do you value the accident that was prevented, you know?
Right.
I'm going to take a break again. But what I want to ask about is I want to know how you could afford this, because I think we've even gone far enough in this recording. You can hear it's affecting everything. And now the management team's doing project management for this transformation. And the distraction factor is expensive, and changing the people is expensive. And everybody feel the expense, and they can feel the bleeding of money. All right, on that lovely note, this is The Growth Strategist with Eldon Amb. We'll be right back with the answer to how do you afford to do a business model change. We'll be right back.
Each week, I download The Growth Strategist into my iPod to listen to while I'm on the treadmill at the gym, because the host, Eldon Amb, knows what's on my mind as president of a $50 million company. With 30-plus years of experience as an award-winning entrepreneur and consultant, plus 6 years hosting her weekly radio talk show, she knows what she's talking about. And when it comes to acquisitions, succession, growth financing, franchising, going public, joint ventures, global product launches, you name it. And her candid interviews with the presidents of Midsize Company provide great examples and ideas.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Eldon Amb. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Eldon Amb.
Welcome back to the show, and today we're talking about how do you afford? Well, we're talking about making a business model change. And this segment, we're going to talk about how do you afford to do it? Because it better be worth it. Your management team is working in parallel. It's running the day to day, and it's figuring out this change. You're upgrading some of the staff. You're upgrading your technology. You're renegotiating with different vendors. You may even change some of them. Your systems are changing. I mean, can you feel this is expensive? This is expensive. So let me just ask, did you ever add up while you were going through this change what it cost you to do the business model change? Or did you say, let's not add that up, it's too scary?
It's a scary number, and just really thinking about it offhand, it'd probably be at least about $500,000 by the time you look at the software improvements as well as the people improvements, and I'm probably not accounting for other costs. It's a lot of money. It's also a lot of time, because remember,
I was thinking of the time part. The executives and so many dollars per hour in this extra work that they did. Some of them are out there on salary and stuff, but didn't they put in a lot of extra hours?
They did. I mean, people put in a lot of hours. The whole business had to keep running the way it was. But I think one of the most unaccounted for costs in a small to mid-sized business is time. People look at money, and they look at, they're adding up their dollars in terms of how much something costs.
Yeah, but cash.
When you spend time going down a road that doesn't make sense, that's an enormous waste of resources in a small to mid-sized business. Big companies can spend enormous amounts of time and all this stuff. They've got all kinds of resources. To their detriment, though, unfortunately, they spend on this.
Yeah.
Small companies can't spend a ton of time on something that's not going to make sense for them.
All right. Now, but here, one of the first questions about how did you afford it? A lot of my clients, when they've gone through this kind of thing, we've had to figure out incentives or some kind of sweeten the pie for the executives to go through all that agita to lift. Because if, say, for example, you're the only owner, and then a whole team of people is having to work double and triple time on salary, there's going to be some resentment to that instead of excitement. Did you change any of the compensation or incentive or equity stakes for anybody?
Well, from a compensation perspective, we have pretty much everyone in the organization on some kind of incentive plan, and there was incentives related to doing this. And also, me as the business owner, being flexible with our people in terms of what they were doing, and you know, also making sure people don't get burnt out.
I've seen it. You know, go through something like this, one of your perks is going to be a decent vacation.
Absolutely. And flexible time. We have a very flexible environment. People are able to work from home if they need to. So I try and provide a level of flexibility because you got to take care of your people. So it's taking care of them. And then also from my standpoint as the sole owner, and having to have an important partner from a banking perspective, getting my bank, or in your other listeners' cases, maybe it's their investors or partners, whatever their financial fiduciaries are, if you will, getting them on board, understanding that you're going through a difficult transition, which our bank did. You know, they were really wonderful because I'll tell you, when we were spending this money, it was showing on our P&L. And if they weren't understanding of what was going on, what we were trying to do, we would have been history. They would have really-
It's actually a good reminder because I've seen some folks that are going through a business model change and then they get scared to go to the bank and be transparent. And then the numbers start going south. And then that's a bad relationship with each other because they're going, wait a minute, you're bleeding money. You know, we gave you this little loan. And it actually interferes with you getting an appropriate line of credit for what you're doing on purpose, right?
Yes.
So let's remind people when you did this, you were doing this in 2009. Okay, so financial markets imploded and you know, bailouts of big banks. It wasn't exactly easy to get financing. And yet you said you got financing. Wow.
Yeah, we had financing in place. Our bank continued to commit to us. We restructured a few things, and they were very much on board. And then, 2009, 2010, 2009 was really particularly tough. But last year, we started to see the fruits of this. And I remember it was back in the spring. We had gotten a fairly large contract, and I was very excited to take a scan of that and send it over to my banker and really
– Because they got skin in the game.
They've got skin in the
game. They want to know, is this paying off and were we bright? They don't want to look stupid.
Exactly.
Especially at that time, all the flashlights were, you know, phone books out on them. And anything that they do that wasn't quite perfect, you need to do? Get the names of the people from the bank. We'll put an ad on the radio shows because you just endorsed them so. And, hey, if we get some other customers, let's say thank you to them.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to say their names, Anyway, all right, so you went through all that. You had to manage outside vendors. You had to manage your staff. You had to manage your systems, et cetera, et cetera. Tell me something that went wrong. Just did not go perfectly. Give me an example of something that went wrong.
I knew that you would put me on the hot seat and ask me something that went wrong.
Hey, come on. Right? It's not realistic to think, oh, it's so smooth and it's, you know, no.
Absolutely, a lot went wrong. I mean,
give me some examples of some bad days.
I think one of the things is we did not make a personnel decision quick enough. I had somebody that was on the bus who had been on the bus, and they weren't the right player to continue forward with us. And I did not, as quickly as I should have, make a decision to free up their future, for lack of a better word. And so,
you didn't have that discussion. I call it the "we both know."
Yeah,
we both know I'm going in a different direction to you, and this isn't the job for you anymore, so let's talk. And we all kick ourselves. We didn't have the "we both know" discussion soon enough.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so that wasted time. That wasted time.
For them, too.
And for them as well. And so we also had difficulties with, you know, some of the early days of, what do we include in the model? And what we found was we were rolling it out, and some people had certain things that were included. Other people had certain things that weren't included. And, you know, it wasn't as seamless as I would have liked it to have been. And so the thing I sit back and think of, though, is that we really tried to take the opportunity for the team to learn from the mistakes. I use the analogy, it's like paying tuition. Okay, so me keeping somebody on for 3 months or 4 months longer than I should have cost me X. Well, that was my tuition for that class. And if it's wasted, then I didn't learn something. But
that's a good analogy, though. I like that.
If it's not wasted, then, you know, and I sit back and say, okay, what did I learn in that scenario? Well, I learned that I should have done X, Y, and Z. Well, you know what? Yeah, I wasted money. I wasted time. But the tuition I paid was somehow worth it for the next
year. There are some years you can't afford to learn so much, though.
No way. No way.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but you still haven't told me, like, a significant, like, you had to run to the bank and ask for some for money, or a big account was so upset and you had to go back and resell them, or cash was tight or negative for a while. Anything like that?
Yeah, you know, I would say that for a period of time we had very tight, we were very tight with cash. There was a period of that. We had also our sales folks not understanding the model and taking that model forward, and how much time and money does that waste? You're paying for salespeople. They're not performing to the level they need to. I mean, I could list.
You know, that's surprising. That's not surprising. One of the things I've seen that's the hardest for business model change is existing salespeople getting retrained, drinking the Kool-Aid, and learning how to sell new. One of my clients down in Texas is going through this, and I don't know how many of the existing salespeople are going to make it, because if they just kind of refuse to learn, they shouldn't stay. They're not happy or whatever. If they can get it, I mean, they're wonderful people. And, you know, and if they can just get this piece and kind of grow, oh, the money they would make and how neat it would be. But, you know, it's a personal decision about whether or not you're going to let it in.
Yes, you're right. You're exactly right. And I think that can
that's one of the most expensive costs. I found that that's one of the most expensive costs is training, retraining, and whatever the salespeople.
Right, because why the salesperson is on board month in, week out, and they're not doing anything, that cost, you know, it goes right off the bottom line. You're not getting any value from a salesperson if they're not able to go out and produce. And so the longer that process takes, the more money and time it costs an organization. Plus the amount of time you need to get the next person on board and to assess them correctly and bring them into the team.
Yeah, so, there's some studies about the costs of that, you know. Yeah. All right, now there's a couple of more specifics, and then we'll bring and make a significant shift to what we focus on for the future. There are some costs associated with the doubt in the customer's mind, or they're taking certain things for granted. For example, there's so many things given away free on the internet now. I think a lot of people aren't really appreciating what they're buying, and they don't even think they have to spend money for some stuff. Or they have an impression that that stuff is secure, their information. If it goes to the cloud, there's no risk. And they don't even understand why would they need the high availability and business continuity? Am I nuts? Is it a harder sell because people are misinformed?
You're not at all. And I think this goes back to the beginning of our conversation. No matter what the size of the organization, you need a strategic skill set to help you as an executive make decisions around IT. And if you're going into the cloud, just because you go into the cloud doesn't mean it's secure, safe, redundant. You have to investigate where you're going and understand that. The analogy I use a lot, and I love it when I'm talking to CEOs. I'll go in and I'll be meeting with CEOs, and I'll say, I'm going to give you a piece of advice, and I want you to all agree that this was the best piece of advice you've ever heard. And they're all waiting. And my advice is, when you get back to your office, I want you to make the most junior level person that knows how to balance a checkbook the CFO of your organization. And as I let that out, they either look or laugh, but regardless, they sit back and they say, this guy's nuts. Why is he saying that? Unfortunately, when it comes to IT, I see it in organization after organization. They make someone junior level, whether it's someone in the organization that understands it more than they do, or maybe it's a friend or relative, whatever the case may be. They're now all of a sudden in charge of IT. And just because somebody's good at making these computers network and those sorts of things does not mean they have the strategic skill set. So I think
And they don't even know what they don't know.
And they don't know, and a lot of times because of the engineer skill set, they sometimes aren't as easy to admit what they do know and what they don't know. It's just the reality. Yeah. Nothing against that skill set. It's just the reality. So I think as things go into the cloud, my advice around that is you need the strategic support. You need the high-level guidance on what to do. And there's a lot of misinformation.
And you know, and let's go back to maybe the biggest question on this is when you see that there is a disconnect, there's some pain, the work isn't paying off, you're starting to bleed money, those kind of symptoms. That first step, I think I want to add in here, is there's some market analysis about where the trends are, where are those customers going, what's the market potential, that kind of external focus, because you can feel the internal pain, and it's going to be expensive change. And what I'd like everybody to hear is make sure that your outside potential is going to pay the $1 million change. Because you think yours is about $500,000. I think that was about $1 million. You know, it sounds like it's expensive. It just is. It's not free. And I know you didn't add it up for, there's a reason, you know what I mean? You don't want to know sometimes.
I don't want to know.
No, and it helped, you paid off. But if you actually cranked that number ahead of time, you might not have done it. So, but I just want to remind people of that. If you just do a little bit of market research about the potential, it reminds you why, and you're not quite as nervous. And you also look for some of your initial clients to be covering the cost sooner, because then it gives you more confidence and you let go of project mentality or whatever more quickly. So I want to take a break, and we have our last segment. What we'll be focusing on is where you're going in the future. What are you looking for now? What keeps you up at night? And I want to hear your update on your philanthropy. You're really busy. And if I remember right, Bosnia,
yes,
I want to hear this other side of this change agent guy. All right. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back with Drew Morris-Rowe of CTM Solutions.
It pays to listen to The Growth Strategist if you are an executive running a mid-sized company. As the CEO of a $75 million business, I like to listen to the first segment of each show when Aldana Ambler provides practical advice about the growth strategy of the week. There's no fluff in her interviews. Her guests are all presidents or CEOs of companies between $20 million and $200 million a year. Aldana's candid interviewing style reveals how they executed their ESOP, made their acquisitions work, timed their initial public offering, or obtained growth financing. Aldana Ambler's show helps bring out the growth strategists in us.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. And today I'm talking with Drew Morris-Rowe. He's the CEO of CTN. Listen to the initials and the way we talk these days. All right, CTN Solutions, just to remind you, network infrastructure, disaster recovery, business continuity, that kind of thing. So mid-sized companies that are really looking at their systems from where they were before and wondering, is this going to take us where we're going to be going? This is the kind of company you call in when you have that question. Instead of turning to the young kid that you have running the IT department that's over their head, they're not going to be able to help you. So if you need that kind of strategic partner, that's what you're looking for, right? The mid-sized companies that are at that point. I want to know what else you're looking for. I mean, future-oriented. Where are you headed in the next few years? What kind of things keep you up at night? You know, that kind of CEO talk.
Great question. Well, I think, first of all, we're continuing to evaluate and evolve the business model, and we have a cloud offering as well. So we now can work with a client in one of two ways. We can either manage what they have on site, or we can put them into the cloud, or do a hybrid. So part of it, Aldana, is the constant improvement of the business model.
Yeah. So you can't rest on your laurels at all. You'll be doing another business model change in what, 2 years?
Yeah, probably about 2 years, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
start saving your money.
Exactly. Yep. Uh-huh. So that's going to continue as well. But I also think getting into organizations from an assessment point of view, just saying, look, have us come in and let's take a look around. Let's validate what you're doing. You probably have your books audited every year by an external firm. Why not have your IT audited?
Yeah.
And, you know, for those organizations that think they need internal staff, you may or may not. We have a client that's got 700 employees in 20 offices throughout the U.S., and they have no internal IT staff whatsoever. So, and they're saving an enormous amount of money, and we're providing that for them. So,
not as a reminder, because some people don't want the assessment because they think they're going to be sold something so expensive or so big or so many people that they're going to get scared. So it's like ignorance is bliss, and they don't do the assessment.
Well,
but they can get an assessment.
That's right. And I think what I'll do is I'll sort of lift the lid under the hood of the car and let my fellow CEOs in and say that the assessment is important for our clients, but it's important for us because we want to assess that they're a fit into our business model.
Exactly. And they might not be.
And they
that's like us. We're doing a strategic assessment of somebody, and maybe the first thing we're doing is passing it to the IP people because that was a real issue.
Exactly.
I want to know, you're looking for something. Something tells me beyond customers. You know, at this point, are you looking for new staff, higher level staff? Are you looking for a new location? Are you looking for to acquire companies, merge? What are you looking for at that kind of level?
Our plan right now is organic growth, of course, which is increase in just sales through client, through salespeople, et cetera, and client acquisition. But we're also looking for strategic opportunities to acquire smaller firms that have maybe not made this business model shift. It's very difficult to make. They're still doing things on a project level or an hourly level. They don't have the resources to make the shift. And frankly, so many of the CEOs, if you will, that I see that are running our competitors at a smaller level are more technical people. I have a business background. I'm not that technical. And so it's really hard for them to see the business model change and to do it.
Yep.
So we're trying to find those sorts of opportunities where we can bring them into our organization, allow them to excel to what they do best, which is the technical aspect, and then we can transform their clients onto a new model. So we're looking at
that. Makes sense. You're ready for that. So like what size company would be likely to be interested?
A size company is probably up to about 10 people. So 1 to 10 people that are that's a small IT firm that maybe have a portfolio of 15, 20, 30 clients that are really serving well. We can bring them into our fold and go from there. And of course, maybe a bigger firm, but that seems like a nice niche for us, that 2 to 10 person employee company.
The timing of that's right. There's a lot of baby boomers that have grown their business to a certain scale, and they may want to still play with the technology piece, so it feels like play, but they're kind of done being the business manager and all the nightmare that it goes with that. And this is the good timing for it. So I'm glad you're saying it. And it's a reminder to the listeners, you know, what comes first, second, third. A lot of times business model really being reframed positions you to be in acquisition mode. And you're always looking to buy. It's a wonderful way to learn about businesses and see the difference between where you're going and where someone else has been and still stuck. And you're not always shopping. You're not always buying, but you are always shopping. I just want to remind you, you're always recruiting and you're always looking at acquisitions at your kind of scale. So I want to ask about your philanthropy, and then we can give contact information for people to contact you. One of the things that keeps you psyched and motivated is, you know, you have a bigger cause in mind, yeah?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. I've taken a very special interest in the last 15 years working with youth, especially that had been victims of war and genocide. So I've traveled all over the world. I've been to the Middle East. I've been to Central America. I spent a lot of time in the summer months in Eastern Europe and in the former Balkans in particular. And over the last 4 or 5 years, I've developed a leadership program because there's so many young people over there in their 20s and late teens that don't have much guidance on what happens next in life. University is a very difficult thing to get to. And so what we're trying to do with these programs is give young people some guidance around how to be entrepreneurs or how to go on an interview, how to present yourself. And while that's going on, Aldana, you know, you're the queen of doing a lot of things at once. What we're trying to do underlying at once is we've got students that come to these programs from Kosovo, Serbia, Bosnia, Croatia. So we're also doing conflict resolution and peace building activities because all these young people are interacting with each other. So it's been a fabulous program in the last 4 or 5 years.
You know, I am finding more often, though, that some of the CEOs that have the stamina and the interest to truly keep growing their businesses and go through things like business model changes, there's something else that makes them tick. And it's more of a servant leader kind of personality, and it might be about this, or it might be, you know, a post-disaster victims, or it might be a particular disease, but I swear, 9 times out of 10, you know, there's a deepness that has to be there to be a CEO today, and, you know, one of the motivating, you know, factors is there's something else that makes it bigger than them and bigger than all the details that they have to handle in making a change. So I thought I'd ask about it. Yeah, but we got to quickly wrap up. So tell me, you know, your contact information. So if someone wants to reach you about CTN Solutions or your philanthropic causes, how do they reach Drew Morris Rowe?
Great. Well, you can take a look at our website. It's www.ctnsolutions.com. And that N is in network, not M is in something else. else. And then my email address I'll give you is dmorrisrowe, so my first initial last name, at ctnsolutions.com. And I'd be happy to answer any questions or give any advice or provide any networking for folks in the event of introductions or that sort of thing. I'm on LinkedIn as well, so people can try and find me that way.
Okay. And, you know, our little community here of the 300 guests, you know, they end up, like, exchanging leads with each other. You may get an acquisition candidate that way. You don't ever know.
Who knows?
And to reach me, if you know my name, it's easy. It's aldona@ambler.com, A-L-D-O-N-N-A, at A-M-B-L-E-R. And I do have multiple companies, so I had too many telephone numbers. So if you're dealing directly with me, it's 1-888-ALDONA. So my sign out, as it is every week, is my wish for you is accelerated growth with sustained profitability. And remember that the secret to it is to reverse the phrase. First, you need to know what drives your profitability and be able to sustain it. Then you get fancy with the growth strategies like acquisitions and such, and then you can step on the gas. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldona Ambler, signing out.
You've been listening to the Growth Strategist Radio Show. Tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, for a new, exciting episode.